Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Rhode Island is a small state with a big past, thanks to its founder. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is here to talk about Roger Williams and what he set in motion generations ago. Lincoln, the time is yours.
Well, let me tell you the story.
I love your stories, Lincoln. I got to say, I love your story.
This is an interesting one. I know about Roger Williams, and I love history, and the picture of Roger Williams wading through the snow in his exile from the Massachusetts Bay Colony on the way to making his way to establishing Rhode Island is sort of an iconic one. But not long ago, somebody called me up, and they said that you need to cover Roger Williams. And I said, well, we've done it before. And they said, there's a book on Roger Williams' life that is just so unique. Liberty Magazine needs to deal with this. And they said, we'll buy it for you. We'll get it on online for you and send you a copy. And they did that. And when it arrived, I found to my interest that it was a book published in 1939, which I look at history with significant times. 39, that was right on the cusp of World War II, a time of great crisis. And it was written by Charles Small Longacre. And I sort of know that guy. His picture's on the wall just around the corner from my room. He was an editor of Liberty Magazine.
Well, what do you
know? In fact, I believe he was the longest-serving editor. He was editor from 1913, which is interesting because that was at the beginning of World War I,
right,
to 1942. So through a very tumultuous time, he was probably the longest-serving editor of Liberty Magazine. Wrote many things, which I've often seen, but this I hadn't known. And as I look through this book, I see, man, he's really got his finger on the pulse of the meaning of Roger Williams' life and his significance as a seminal figure in establishing religious freedom in the United States. Roger Williams often missed because he predates the American War of Independence and the formation of the Constitution, but he had everything to do with establishing attitudes in this country.
All right, so we have Roger Williams here, written by someone who is interested in religious freedom and religious liberty. So are you saying that Rhode Island was built on a religious liberty event or situation?
Well, he ran foul of the religious authorities in the Commonwealth, as they called it, the religious Commonwealth, that really calculatedly was designed to use the civil law to uphold religious mandates. The Ten Commandments even were consciously designed to be upheld by the government there. And Roger Williams, of course, didn't think it was within their purview. The first four commandments, he thought, were the first table of stone and dealt with moral transcendent issues. There were no business of the state whatsoever. And that was revolutionary back then for him to say that. Yes. So in the end, as a public nuisance, he was sent into exile. He was ejected from the state. Well, now, you know, if you're ejected from Maryland, you get in your car and you drive to Carolina or somewhere, it's a couple of hours. Back then, that was a rough equivalent to Moses being sent out into the wilderness to die.
That's true.
There really was no effective Western civilization beyond that little colony, and the savages, as they were called, would probably just as soon kill you as help you. But it's a testament to Roger Williams that he not only was befriended by and befriended the Indians and lived with them, but he was able to establish a whole state, not very big, but a state that had a great following and became a great mercantile center because it gathered together all faiths and all types of people living in relative harmony, which was not happening in the original settlement.
So Rhode Island sort of became the, what they used to call those in the Bible, where a person would run away from persecution and there was this place they would go. What are those called?
City of Refuge.
City of Refuge. So Rhode Island became the state of refuge for people who were running from religious persecution, right?
Absolutely.
Interesting. Rhode Island.
And I better give the time frame of this. He began the colony of Providence Plantation in 1636 as a refuge for religious minorities. He was a member of the Baptist Church, the mainline, well, I shouldn't say mainline religion, mainline now, but at that time, Baptists were part of the nonconformist non-state churches in England, which was really heading into quite a religious conflict that eventuated in the Civil War within about 10 years of that. Mm-hmm. And it is worth mentioning, and I haven't been on my hobby horse lately, that Roger Williams had a very close connection, because he'd recently come from England, a very close connection with a lot of the leading lights of the Puritan rebellion against the king that resulted in the Civil War. And as a consequence of that, the Puritan army gained the ascendancy, formed their own parliament, and the Puritans, with their leader Oliver Cromwell as the Lord Protector instead of the king after they'd killed the king, had a religious republic. So the sentiments that informed that religious republic in England were pretty much the same sentiments that Roger Williams brought to the New World.
I can't help but think, as we apply what you say and the story you tell there of Roger Williams, how all of our churches, every Christian church should be a city of refuge. Every Christian church should be that place where anyone of any religion can come and find refuge and acceptance and brotherhood. Would I be right in saying that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. But we're not. When we have our doors open, there is a filter in place, and we find this in far too many examples. There is a filter in place that, well, you know, okay, you can come in, you can be here, but we're not going to fully accept you until you have made some doctrinal, until you have made some religious and some social and some cultural changes. What is wrong with that statement?
Well, it's coercion.
Yes.
True religious freedom can't exist alongside coercion or narrow-mindedness. It shouldn't be necessary, at least in the concept of religious freedom. It's not necessary for people to be right, doctrinally correct, or whatever. Yes, if you're an evangelist or a proponent of a particular viewpoint, you want conformity, you want converts, and so on, and there's nothing wrong with that. But in the broad spectrum of religious activity, you have to be prepared to allow people to differ from you, to live alongside you, and to grant them respect and the accommodation that can allow for a free practice of religion. Mm-hmm.
And do you also then include that free practice into other social areas, Lincoln? I think you know where I'm going with this thing.
No, I don't.
You don't?
Spell
okay.
it out for me.
All right, let's say we're open to Muslims, we're open to Hindus, we're open to Catholics, we're open to Jews, we're open to homosexuals, right?
Well, we should be.
We should be.
Okay. The very first major state document of the United States, the Treaty of Tripoli, said as much. At least that was the aim of this new secular republic. It said, no way is the United States founded upon religion. It's as much for the Christian as the Muslim, as it said, Muslim and all the rest. Yeah. I'm not sure that back then they could have imagined tens of millions of Muslims in the United States, but certainly there was no philosophical contradiction to open up the country to all practices of religion. As long as they were peaceable, they were welcome. Mm-hmm. And the state really is, I think I said in another program, its main obligation is just to protect and not to restrict religious activity.
Okay, I'm going to really put you on the spot here. You are the pastor of a Seventh-day Adventist church right there in Maryland someplace. And in the door comes a Muslim, followed by a Jew, followed by a homosexual. And these people come and they want to sit and they want to listen to the sermon and they want to take part in the church. So far, so good, right? Now, those same people come up and say, I want to be a Seventh-day Adventist. Can you make more restrictions on the fact that they want to be a member of your church than you can when you say they want to attend your church?
Well, of course. This is a contradiction. If someone wants to be a member, you know, to sign up, but not sign on.
Yes, yes.
But
yes.
The lifestyle, obviously, yes. Then it's a charade. No organization or church should bring people aboard who are not ready to accede to the outlines of the faith and to live the way that's called upon.
And I say this because this is where it all falls down, Lincoln. This is where the churches miss the boat. They don't want people in their pews unless they have already decided that the way Seventh-day Adventists or Baptists or Methodists and believe and the doctrines they're in, they don't want to associate with them until they've decided that they want to go along as if they want to become a member of the church. Am I right?
Yes, people make don't see the distinction. In the Old Testament, God says, my house is a house of worship for all people.
All people, yes.
So we shouldn't exclude anybody that wants to come. In fact, it says the Spirit and the Bride say, come, whoever yes. will may come.
Yes, yes. Go into the highways and byways and find people to come.
Right. Yeah. We should bring people in, and the damage to mentally and morally damaged of all types, should be better for them to come into the church than to be elsewhere getting into worse trouble. They should come and fellowship and listen and hear. But that's not the same as church membership. But to accept people into church membership that you haven't explained the truth to, they haven't accepted it, they haven't given some willingness to abide by it. And, you know, I don't believe in the Inquisition because you can carry that too far. But obviously, within normal guidelines, as Paul says, the believers are qualified to judge. Yes. And there's processes, not just of individual prejudice, where a person can be deemed no longer in agreement with the body and, you know, their name terminated, not their salvation. That's right. Up to them and
right.
God.
Right.
But yes, you're right. You got me on a good point here. There's great misunderstanding on this dynamic.
Well, I think that we should look upon our churches as an evangelistic tool, not simply something that we go out and evangelize, but our services, our relationships with each other, how we sing and how we pray and how we preach and how we socialize. That's an evangelistic tool as well. And if we can bring people into our church and get them on the pews and say, look, we want to make you healthy. We want to make you your relationship with your wife stronger. We want to help you with your children. Then if you want to start talking about doctrines, then if you want to start evangelizing, that's fine. But put them in the pew, sit them down, sit them next to you, open their Bible and say, I'm glad you're here.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
All right.
And if that attitude was carried forward, there'd be a better public spirit in the whole community. And I think individual faith communities would be enlarged and strengthened too.
And I think that's what Roger Williams brought to the forefront in 1636 when he made that trek through the snow, as you say, and he started befriending the Indians, who, by the way, befriended him. So he was a victim, and I put that word in quotes, of that type of openness and that type of love. And he was able to establish an entire United States state of Rhode Island. I think that's kind of a cool story, Lincoln. Thank you for sharing that with us.
It's a wonderful story. And please, our listeners should read Liberty Magazine. We've got an ongoing series pulled from that book. There'll be at least 4 articles from that book. Makes great reading.
Very good.
And it underscores the founding principles of the United States, of course, a generation or two later, but he was not inconsequential to what we enjoy today.
The website is libertymagazine.org. You can read it there as well as subscribe to the magazine and enjoy it right there in the comfort of your own home. Also, libertymagazine.org is the place where you can have magazines sent to thought leaders in your community. You can support the ministry. Also, read Lincoln's blogs. There's some videos to look at. There's some comments to read. It's a dynamic website I think you'll enjoy. Just stop by there sometime, libertymagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, editor, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.